Hey, Dr. Drew here, and this is just a reminder that the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care or medical evaluation. This is purely for entertainment and education. We hope you learn something, but see your doctor, get proper medical care. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
And gentlemen, boys and girls, turn your iPhone back on, hook it up to Bluetooth in the car, because we've got another podcast of This Life.
And now, that's right. That's, of course, Bob Forrest. Call us at 323-649-8268. Any questions you might have. Most importantly, go to doctor.com, click through on the Hydrolite banner. You get 30% off on your purchase. And the code DREW18 will gift you that. We love this product, these guys, the rehydration product. Then if you also want to get some special prices on our friends at Bergamet, the banner there at doctor.com will give you a discount when you click through. We're proud to have these products back in with us for 2018. We're also taking your calls live today for an extra half hour, so call us. The number is on the Facebook Live blurb. Again, it's 323-649-8268. Also, follow at This Life Podcast, and we are happy to welcome.
I'm getting distracted by your wife.
Well, first of all, Shelley is with us still.
Hi, guys.
Shelley Sprague is still with us, and we are all delighted to bring our friend Mary Ellen Cook in here.
Yeah. Who reminded me that it's been 10 years to the day, Drew, since Celebrity Rehab started.
What?
I know, right?
We're old.
Wow. Well,
I'm going on Instagram.
Really?
Seems like it was just a couple
We're
years
really
ago.
Old.
I'm still feeling the effects of it.
I know. I was 27 then. Now I'm 37.
Well, and you're going to get married. We'll talk about all this.
Yes.
But I one of the moments that, Marilyn, you did not see that stuck out of my mind was when you started, we had to walk down the street a few times.
Yes.
Poor
yes.
Shelley. I felt so bad for her. You guys were driving her crazy.
Yes, we did. Well, I was really well-behaved. It was more like Jessica and Seth, I think. And Jeff. And Jeff. Jeff, obviously.
Jeff always.
Yeah, definitely.
Jeff was the toughest one.
Well, I mean, I think the whole environment was a little bit different, something yes. I wasn't really used to.
Yes.
And so what I had, you know, had to kind of adjust to was things that were kind of beyond my control. And so I had a bit of trouble adjusting to the whole situation, not because the clients were who they were and what you guys were, you know, up to, but more because of the context of what we're doing it within that construct. And so it was tough for my little brain, you know, to make it, you know,
but you
make
all
it all make
getting
sense.
Kicked out.
Right.
You know what I think is funny is that when I went to Promises Malibu, the first or second day I was there, the girl I was really close with, she goes, I watched Celebrity Rehab. She goes, you know, I've been here for a week. There's no drama in rehab. You guys must have made that all up. Oh. Well, then as the weeks progressed,
there was a lot of drama.
Right. It's like a little high school when you're in rehab, you know? Yes. It wasn't just
Absolutely.
Celebrity Rehab.
No,
all
no.
rehab.
All rehabs
are pretty much, I mean, I thought Celebrity Rehab, now after going to other rehabs, was actually a very accurate portrayal
right.
of rehab.
It That's
was
right.
Nothing, I mean, no, if anything, we got better treatment on Celebrity Rehab than a normal rehab because we had a smaller group.
Mm-hmm.
We got one-on-one time more with you, with Bob. So, I mean, I felt it was actually a better rehab situation.
It was just what the three
rehabs.
Of us do. I mean, there are the three of us and plus some other people, Sasha and people on the team.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
Luisha.
Day in and day out, that's what we're doing. And it was a good, you know, it was a good introduction for you because obviously now later you see that you were really getting treatment and you were actually making some progress there, you know?
Oh, I think, I mean, I get really upset when people criticize it mm-hmm. and think it was made up for TV mm-hmm. or this wasn't real treatment because, mm-hmm. you know, because that's the other thing. People don't realize we had 2 to 3 hour long process groups that were seeing you one-on-one almost every day, mm-hmm. you know?
It was heavy duty.
It was heavy duty.
It was rehab.
That sort of was depleting us, in fact, because usually you'll hand off, you know, but it was just the three of us all the time.
I know. Right? I loved it. I want to go back again. Let's
do
it again.
I think.
Well, the other thing is you responded to it because you'd never had a family feel like that.
Yeah.
That was a really, I thought, a poignant piece of your story is that we became like a little surrogate family for you.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I went to PTP, Promises, other program, they let me stay an extra couple of days for free because I just didn't want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to stay
yet.
In rehab. And I told them if I win the lottery, I'm going to live in rehab permanently.
You went to Pico?
Yeah. It was,
wow.
That was on Wilshire. But now they closed it, actually.
Yeah, I think they did. So
we always
what
liked that
she
program.
Went through,
yeah.
no, so it was
is that
the professional.
Paul Williams over there? Was that
Dr. Greg Skipper. Dr. Skipper.
The Greg guy. So they were doing tours because it was going to be the professionals track of Promises,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And Sheila Balkin and I go by there and we go through the tour and he's telling us all what you guys were going to do.
Oh, it was great.
And we just both looked at each other and he said,
you're talking about real, this is just treatment.
It's treatment.
And he was like, yeah, isn't it weird you have to come up with a new brand for treatment, because treatment had become so accommodating, so such BS, that they were just calling the professionals track, calling it a separate new thing, like it's a new thing. And it was really go to group or go home. Right?
Right.
That's what, well, that's, and theirs is actually a lot stricter, because it's a lot of, I mean, I don't know how I ended up in there. Actually, well, Dr. Sophie wanted me in the professionals program to bring me back to more of my roots and like the kind of prep school I went to. He wanted me to be with the doctors and lawyers. But it was, you know, pretty much all doctors and physicians who got in some sort of trouble at work.
Yeah.
And so they have to, you know, they have to do everything right, or else Dr. Skipper doesn't approve them to go back to work. And they're all required.
And there's the board.
Well, there is no, there is no, I don't like the rules, I'm going to leave. I mean, for these doctors, it's lose your license if you don't stay.
We dealt with a lot of doctors, if you remember, and they were really tough to treat.
They're very tough. I mean, the guy I'm engaged to, he's very tough to treat.
We'll hear more about that as well.
He was in rehab for 6 months. But he's a great guy.
That's what it takes.
See, I realize when I say these things, he's not.
Just like everybody's not newbie. Everybody's not newbie, newbie, newbie. But you guys haven't seen each other since
10 years.
Gosh, the reunion.
You came back, though.
I did. So, well, I came back before Sober House and just came back and visited season two. And then I did Sober House season one, which we shot a year after. But Shelley wasn't part of Sober House.
Right.
Yeah.
We only got to see you and back.
She didn't want to live with you guys.
I love Sober House. You know, that's another thing. Unlike real sober livings, you don't generally get, we were getting process groups every day.
Yeah,
in Sober House, it was really just like rehab living in a different place.
Right. It was like treatment light.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And then, I love treatment.
It was so funny when we were the
I
producers.
I should go back. I don't even remember any of this. It was so long ago.
But the producers, we were always like, no, just don't worry about it. Stuff always happens in rehab. Just stand back. Let it happen. It always does. I still have trauma from going to Catalina. That was like
that
too
was
much
so fun.
Me.
See, the producers were the ones who told me to take my top off.
I'm sure.
I was not going to do it. I said to them, Dr. Drew's going to get mad if I do this.
See, TV producers said, always have to do the obvious. So TV producers, my argument wasn't the same as yours. I was like, if you don't tell her to take her top off, she will. You don't have to worry about it. And what's his name? Jumped off the boat.
Oh, I knew somebody was going to jump off the boat. Of course.
I knew it.
Rico.
I knew somebody was going to steal one of those bicycles and take off on Catalina. Let drug addicts be drug addicts. But the producers were so trying to make them act like drug addicts. I think that drove you nuts. I was just like, you don't have to tell them.
It's true.
You would have taken your top off even if they didn't tell you, wouldn't you?
No, because I wouldn't want Dr. Drew to be mad at me.
Thank you.
No, I really didn't.
I know. You were a good patient.
Yeah.
Because it would have gotten her kicked out of the program.
And that's the thing in a, you know.
Right?
In the real world. That was the only thing. That was the only thing different, is that I wasn't allowed to kick people out.
Yeah, you weren't able to.
We never kick people out. We just move them to the psych ward, if you recall.
We would give them options. We'd give them options.
Yes.
They would often go to that ward. That was
it.
That was what they were
doing. Two East, it was called.
Right. Yes, I remember.
So what's going on in your life now? So first, your sobriety.
Okay, so I was dreading coming here. So I had 416 days sober.
Uh-huh.
And then when I, and you know, it's funny. I mean, I see now how the relapse happened. You know, once I got sober, I went out to Vegas. I was starting to get booked every single weekend again. I slowly stopped going to all my meetings because I was traveling every single weekend. I stopped going. Every Wednesday was my promises meeting. I was always going to that. Started missing it. The young boyfriend and I broke up, and I ended up, you know, drinking. It was a one night. It was on November 18th. And then I got sober. You know, I did it again and got really actively involved with promises again. And then I caught my fiance at the time was my boyfriend, that he had had sex with a bunch of hookers behind my back.
He did?
Yeah. Oh my Don't worry. God. He's in. Yeah. So
this,
then
is a different guy?
No, this is the guy I'm engaged to now.
What?
Well, it's a sex addiction. I can overlook it.
Is he in treatment?
Yeah, he's in treatment right now.
Okay.
He's a Blue Tiger.
Okay.
So, but then that made me drink again.
They have a sex addiction.
It didn't make me drink.
The Blue Tiger?
Yeah, it's in Palm Springs.
That kind of sounds sexy.
It does. Well,
that's how you get those guys in. That's how you get them in.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to con them to come in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, not that it made me drink. I can see what the trigger was. I just wasn't strong enough that in that point in my sobriety when that happened. And then things were going well with us again, and then there was one other, you know, January 6th, him and I had gotten in an argument, and I went and sat courtside at a Lakers game, and I decided to drink there. And so now my new sobriety date is January 7th.
Congratulations.
So I have 47 days.
Do you guys make much of a distinction between slips and relapses? with your dealing patients?
I do, because part of slipping is part of reintegration of, does this work? No, it doesn't. Does right. this really work? No, it doesn't. And sometimes you have to go through whatever it takes to understand that it doesn't work, mm-hmm. because there's nothing worse than wondering if alcohol still works for me.
Isn't it interesting?
It did not work. It was actually, like they say, your relapse is usually is worse than it was before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the disease really does pick up because... Right. I mean, I only had I had five doubles a night October mm-hmm. on November 10th, and
at Lakers game.
No, that no. was this was the first.
That was later.
But I normally would not have been in a blackout after two drinks, and the behavior I did at this club I was at, mm-hmm. I mean, was it was nothing like I've ever done before, and so it just shows that. The alcohol affected me even worse, mm. you know?
It does. It really does because of the way that it affects your brain mm-hmm. when you haven't been drinking for quite some time.
Yeah.
Or 400 and some days, right? And then you go and you have a couple of doubles
yeah.
and you go into a blackout.
But you seem much clearer about what you're contending with.
With
alcoholism.
Oh, I have no doubt that I'm an alcoholic.
And then
I understand. I mean, I see... You know, it's like when they say when your life starts getting too busy or you start getting back all the things you were losing in your disease, which was happening for me. I mean, all the different clubs were, you know, happy with me again. I was doing a great job. I was sober. I was getting booked for things. I stopped going to my meetings. I stopped hanging out with, you know, my best friend, my sponsor. I just
was she the one we met last time?
Yes. Yeah, she was actually going to come today, but she's sick.
She seemed very solid. So
yeah, she's actually just got 18 months.
Now, I think we talked a little bit about this last time, but isn't it interesting that a lot of your unraveling comes in around relationships.
Oh, 100%. I mean, yeah. I realized what I was doing too in the last relationship was I was staying sober as a way to make him proud, but then also he had a horrible relapse and I started becoming his caregiver. Mm. I mean, well, he was just stayed drunk for months on end and his parents were having me fly up to take care of him to try to get him sober.
Oh, boy.
You know, he'd come stay with me. I'd find bottles constantly. I'd got afraid to leave my place because he was walking off and buying alcohol and, you know, and then once we split up, which I know was probably the best thing ever for me, mm-hmm. You know, if I would have mm-hmm. listened to you and the people at Promises and mm-hmm. my psychiatrist, I would have left him sooner, but I didn't listen to anyone.
Well, I don't and, I told you to leave.
Well, you just said it wasn't a good relationship.
Take care of you.
Yeah, we might have said, I don't, I won't,
okay. you didn't say that.
Yeah, I won't tell you to live your life, but I would say,
I knew that you knew it wasn't good. Mm-hmm. And plus, I mean, if I would have listened to it, what is her name again? The psychic. And Kalise told me on Susan's show that when I kept saying over and over again, well, what about the guy I'm with now? And she's like, well, this is where it should be for now. But she would not. And I asked her over and over again. But then the guy that she told me, then she told me about another guy. And that I was going to ignore for a couple months and I wasn't going to be really interested in.
Is that this guy?
Yeah. And because I met him at a Promises picnic. He kept hitting on me. I blew him off completely. For months, I would see him at meetings and he said I would ignore him when he said hi. I don't necessarily believe that. I'm just so social that I'm talking to a billion people that I probably, you know, I had so many friends. And then he was very persistent, like she said he would be, with trying to ask me out. And then finally, after a couple months, I went out with him. And then she even told me that he was going to like fancy things. And she saw me having a good life with him. And that I would wonder how I ever lived without him. And it's all come true. But I still need to make sure this is the right guy. Because maybe there's another one that this is all going to happen with. So I really need to go on the show again to confirm.
Does Mary
before Carey, July 7th, before I get married.
Okay. Mary Carey, the most... just, you never give up on love.
No.
You never do.
No.
You're the most emotionally resilient after time and time again things going wrong. You just keep trying.
Well, I think I've said this before. You're a love addict. Love addict.
I am.
Yeah, I was thinking codependency, a little love addiction.
Well, that's what I know you hear what I hear. And so what should she do?
Well, I'm
go
always
to meetings.
Go to meetings, but I really think that's looking at an interpersonal sort of structure of a relationship. You know, having a relationship with a therapist who's not codependent, so you can see what it's like to not get enmeshed with people, where you can see where you maintain your autonomy while you're in a relationship with someone and you go alongside them in a parallel way and not in an enmeshed, overly obsessive kind of way.
Yeah, I definitely get obsessed.
And so when you get obsessed, it clouds your judgment. Mm. And that's what obsession does. No matter what you're obsessed with, it's the exclusion of everything else. So like what you were saying was like, oh, well, this could happen with another person. I want to make sure this one's the right one. And it's like, you're right, because obsession can come in all kinds of different ways.
Yes.
And you won't know until all that obsession stuff settles down. Mm-hmm. And then you're really looking at, does the relationship work on all these different levels to make a partnership?
Yes.
And that partnership is what you're going to be looking for to move forward into a future sort of relationship with someone.
And let's remind people what Marilyn's history is too, because that you got, given your history, you can understand why relationships are so difficult.
Well, I mean, I first, you know, it started at 16 with my grandfather dying. Is that because
that started before
your mom.
Yeah, but I mean, just looking at, like, when I studied love addiction, they say it usually happens when there's abandonment. So I think for me it was, because I didn't have boyfriends or anything a lot until I was 16 and my grandfather died. And that's when I felt like I needed to have a boyfriend at all times. Ballet wasn't as important. Boyfriends were, because I started being afraid of being alone.
Think about these traumas that result in acting out. Sometimes they're a second hit.
Yeah.
So the first hit may have been the lack of your biological dad.
Yeah.
He had schizophrenia too?
He has cerebral palsy.
Cerebral palsy.
Well, you know, that's true. They say the very first trauma would have probably been in the first 3 months of life when I was with just my mom and my dad.
And your mom has schizophrenia.
Yes, she has schizophrenia. And they probably weren't holding me properly and stuff like that. So that was actually the first big T. And then the next big T would be, well, you know, big T, little T. I'm talking
about trauma.
Big trauma, little trauma. Because some people have a bunch of little traumas. I have a lot of big identifiable, you know, big traumas, which would be the first one in the first 3 months of life, not being held properly and everything.
Yep.
The second big trauma would be my grandfather dying at 16. Mm-hmm. And then after that, taking care of my mom and grandma. And then,
and there's sort of a chronic nature to your stuff, too. Because, again, your mom is chronically not there. Your dad, biological mom, dad, chronically not there. And then your grandfather dies. And then your grandmother, though, was around,
and then
right?
Her Parkinson's disease was very bad.
So that was chronic.
And
you had
a
caretaker.
Yes.
Yeah.
From 16 on.
And all the while being perfect as a ballerina, doing ballet, school.
Yeah, yep. Makes perfect sense. Yeah. Being, you know, the hero, being the hero. Right?
Savior, I have preoccupied anxious attachment. You know, there's four attachment theories.
See what promises does?
No, but we started it.
We got
it started.
No, this stuff is promises. No,
this is promises as well as, like, we did a lot. When I was in the professionals program, you know, they do a lot because it's all physicians. They really teach you a lot more medical stuff. And when we studied the four attachment theories, and we do about a 60-question test.
So there's avoidant, there's disorganized, there's secure.
Yes, which I'm not.
And ambivalent. Is that the, no, what's that, the fourth one?
I think anxious.
Anxious, yes.
I'm preoccupied anxious.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it makes, you know.
But you can
get
progress.
Healthy. You can become
a
healthy one.
You can progress.
That's the key.
You recognize these problems.
But
you get
that's what she's talking about.
You can progress, because I had attachment problems, and now.
Me too.
Going through.
No,
I think I was more disorganized a little bit. Ambivalent, maybe. Yeah, sort of ambivalent, because I had stuff, and I did 10 years of therapy and emotionally focused therapy.
I did 10 years of therapy as well, and I was preoccupied and anxious, and now I'm secure, and I don't have to have a person to
But as you know, that's not an intellectual process. That's an experiential thing of years and years of working with a therapist kind of thing, which is good. I mean, you're a perfect setup for it now. You like it. You're motivated. You have insight.
Yeah, you're willing.
Yeah. No, I am. I mean, I do, because I see Dr. Sophie every week.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Almost
and you,
every
and
week.
And you have your sponsor when she,
yes,
you're attached
I have a sponsor,
to her.
Yes, and then, you know, I see Dr. Sophie every week.
Good.
And work with him.
Go back to the Promises Wednesdays?
I go that on Wednesdays, Palisades Sunday mornings. And then Promises, we just do a lot of different activities, you know, game night. We go to the Getty Center together once a month. We do bowling. And I'm on the event planning committee. Mm-hmm. So I plan once a month every Wednesday. I go in with Patricia Myers and a couple other alumni, and we help plan events. Like, I plan the holiday party and everything. So I like being very active in the Promises community.
Bob just keeps staring at me like, holy hell.
That's what you're saying the world needs.
Yeah, I know.
There
I
it
know
is.
We've just been saying
but
this.
But it's done by professionals. Patricia Meyer is the greatest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she involves, they have the greatest alumni system of, but it keeps people on track. Cry Help does it. It's modeled, Promises modeled after Cry Help, but it's just way, way nicer.
That's funny, because Patricia went to Cry Help, so that makes sense.
So
but
that community-based stuff. See, you're thinking that it's going to be provided for no money. No, it takes professionals to organize 100, 150, 250, 500 drug addicts to then become vehicles of spreading that goodness. Right? That community.
Well, it takes organization.
It takes organization. It just is not going to come from.
Could religion do that?
Religion could do that.
Yeah.
And religion also is going through a cathartic thing, which is religion politics or is religion religion? Right?
Nothing should be politics right now. Everything pragmatic.
But I think that's what we were talking about with Dave Navarro on a prior thing is the solutions to America's problems don't come from a policy.
No.
They come from us individually getting more whole. And
you
then
agree?
Mm-hmm. And then when you're doing it with other people, whether they've been doing it for 20 years or doing it for, you know, a year, that community then becomes where we'll listen to each other, where we'll forgive one another.
But I'm arguing that community could be a bowling league or it could be all kinds of things. People could gather together.
She just said they go bowling.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. For me, I really think it would have been very hard to have stayed sober and to want to get back into the program without promises because I pretty much stopped hanging out with anyone I was friends with. You know, after I went through treatment, I did not spend time with anyone else. I pretty much only spent time with the Promises community. That was all my social activities.
The
Promises.
They were the winners.
That's what it takes.
And it had, you know, and if they, you know, having all the different events to do and having so many, you know, it's just such a great community. We all, no matter who shows up to the meeting, you know, you have something in common with them because you can all talk about the houses or something, you know, the different living and the therapists. And I love the sense of community with them. And anytime something's wrong, I know I can pick up the phone and call any of the people at Promises. We have a alumni Facebook page. God, you know, you would think Promises is paying me. They should right now because
they have paid you.
But okay. That's true. We went the other.
So, other than the love addiction piece, where do you want to be in 5 years?
I want to be married with.
No, other than the relationship part.
Babies.
You want to be mom?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Let's take.
That is the game plan right now.
Let's take some calls. This is Brittany who called in from Facebook. Brittany, go ahead.
Hi, Mary. What you're saying is interesting because I can totally relate to love addiction. I grew up in an abusive household. My mother, my father were abusive. They're druggies. My mom then married a narcissist who physically abused me, mentally, spiritually, all of us in the house. So I myself became quite, I grew up very angry, and still to this day I'm very angry inside. You know, I'm peaceful, but anything can make me snap when I feel someone is crossing me. I don't have it, and it's unhealthy. I alienate people. And I also have a pattern of coming into abusive relationships, not physically, but mentally and spiritually. That in turn, I'm so codependent on the other person. I never want to be alone. Mm-hmm. And when things go wrong, what do? I abuse myself mm-hmm. and I beat myself up so hard. I start taking Xanax, I start doing coke, I start drinking heavily, smoking marijuana. It's just a never-ending spiral. And I am on Lexapro, but it doesn't seem to help. I try to come off of it, and
well, you're talking about
much worse.
You're talking about symptoms that don't really respond to antidepressants. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there. A
lot of stuff to unpack there.
Trauma stuff.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, and it would take quite some time with professional help. The good news is that you are understanding of what it is going on that's going on with you. So that's like a huge percentage of what we struggle with is identification.
Insight.
So you've identified so many things, and now I think that just putting together a structure to move forward and get better step by step would be the opportunity that I would look for you.
I agree. And I mean, really, they can't really put her on Lexapro until she's had some continued sobriety. Mm-hmm. Because until you have continued sobriety, we don't know what, you know, at least I would think 90 days sober to see what your brain
is. Mary Ellen's going to work in this field. Yeah.
Well, I know. I want to. Well,
that's what I've been saying forever. And then she runs off to Vegas for Christ's sake.
I want to be a drug and alcohol therapist.
Haven't I told you that for 10 years?
Yes, I want to do this. I find it fascinating. So. Well, I'm going back to school for my for psychology.
Yeah, so. Right, actually.
No, I think you could be.
With the next, there was a fallout. And, you know, he actually did put his hands on me. And, of course, naturally, I responded with great anger. And I threw knife at him, a butcher knife at him. And so the police came and they took me to a mental health facility. And it helped, but, you know, and they take me straight to a psychiatrist. And he's just like, oh, he's not very personable. He's like, you just need Lexapro and Xanax. And I'm like, I don't think this is
helping. Lexapro and Xanax. And wow.
But you have these patterns. It's very self-abusive. And I forget who I am. I recognize, but I do forget because what I'm consumed by anger, which I have issues with, obviously,
so
I'm being hurt, but. So, I lose control and I forget everything.
Right. So dialectical behavioral therapy.
Absolutely. 100%. And then also, you know, we got to get you to a place where you can go inpatient somewhere where you can spend 30, 60, 90 days where you're not going to be evoked by your environment so that your brain can settle down a little bit. It sounds like it gets very dysregulated when certain things happen. You get very triggered.
I put her on hold.
I advise treatment.
Yeah, I know. She needs – this doesn't get better fast, that kind of thing. But
no, it would take some
DBT,
time.
What she's describing is, you know, when she's in these intense emotional states
– overwhelmed.
Well, she also loses track that other people's minds have content. So she does things and acts out without really understanding she's hurting other people. She loses track of or even her sense of self, she said. I lose who I am. Those things. I've just become this violent – ball of anger.
Right.
And which that's bad. Yeah. That's not good. You don't want to be like that.
No, and the consequences of that is that she's medicating with dangerous substances.
Right.
And in addition, she's pushing people out of her life who may very well be people that love her or that she loves. And then when you start to lose people around you where you don't feel like people care about you anymore because you've pushed them all away, then you get very lonely and that intense loneliness triggers a more cascading of pain and emotional
also,
pain.
But also it triggers getting help.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that the consequence to our behaviors is what's lacking. Right?
People
tolerate too much BS.
Yes, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
And so she said it so nicely, like, and then I threw a knife at him. I'm imagining Mary's throwing a knife or two.
No, I'm not a physically. I'm verbally violent, but I'm not physically violent.
What would you say the equivalent of a knife throw?
So if somebody, what did you say when this prostitution thing went down? Say some of the things.
Oh, with him.
Oh yeah.
Some of the knife throwing.
Oh, I don't want to say. That's really mean. Okay. I'll say what I said with my ex-husband when I was mad at him. I would call him a short, fat, loser electrician and tell him I'm going to leave for a rich guy. I'd be like, he's short, fat, bald, loser electrician. I'm going to leave you for a rich guy.
That's what you did, didn't you?
I did it. The guy in Promises was very...
See, it manifests.
It manifests.
Well, we think you manifest.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. The guy I'm with now when I come with the hookers, I mean, he's tall, he's smart, he's educated.
What's
his
field
of medicine?
He has a good
career. Emergency medicine.
ER.
He actually said when he was... I always mix up if it's fellowship or internship.
Residency.
That he worked at Huntington.
Oh, yeah.
And you were on one of the floors and he had to call you from the ER.
Oh, yeah.
And like tell you about a patient.
Yeah, yeah.
MD aware.
I love that stuff.
Screen out.
But yeah, he went to USC like you.
Yeah, those are USC hospitals. The four. I'm gonna get the four attached with South Street. I'm preoccupied with that.
Yeah.
Secure, disorganized, avoidant, ambivalent.
And I'm disorganized.
You may have been at one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disorganized is the worst. Disorganized is where you really, you just don't. You know, kids are just completely spinning like tops.
Mm-hmm. Oh no! Yeah. I just thought about on the house. What is this thing for emotional attachment?
For attachment
style.
Attachment
style.
Comes meeting at his house. He's disorganized.
In infant research, they found four attachments. There's something called the adult attachment interview where you can actually form. Did you have the adult attachment
what
interview?
Is the one where too many people are attached to you? And
No.
What
no,
is that?
It's about how you attach.
This is how you.
Yeah. Have you attached to others?
No. Then you become resentful towards all the people that depend
on you.
Let's
sort of avoid.
You.
Probably avoid.
Avoidant. Okay. I have that one.
Yeah. I generally am attracted to avoidance. I think.
You're attracted to avoidance.
Well, I mean, I noticed. Well, the young boyfriend I was with, he was definitely an avoidant.
Well, you know, and that's the sort of love addiction, love avoidance cycle, right?
Yeah. That's the cycle.
But the guy I'm with now is not an avoidant. He might be also like me, preoccupied, anxious. Mm-hmm.
So why do people be avoidant?
I'm just kidding.
Why do they do
that? It's the opposite of abandonment. They have someone that's constantly...
What do I get out of being avoidant?
Well, you don't have to... to really fully engage.
I bet you're ambivalent.
Keeps you safe.
Yeah.
Keeps you safer.
See, you guys always act cured, and I just like to act like how I am. I'm not cured at all.
Okay.
So. Right? So I have these problems in this area for sure, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So
attachment.
I want you to diagnose me. So what I, and you know me best, so mm-hmm. so what do I have? If an attachment disorder, what is my main problem?
Well,
and what do I do about it?
I think that you have...
You're not avoidant.
Not avoidant at all.
No.
I mean, I don't know your relationship history. But.
I get resentful at people that I create them dependent on
me. Yeah, ambivalent.
What is that?
Ambivalent attachment. You get the attachment, then you're ambivalent about it.
Yeah,
I've gotten way better at it in the last 2-3 years.
But I also feel like that's a not just an attachment issue. I think it's like you have to boil it down.
Codependency?
Yeah.
Narcissism? Thinking
narcissism.
You have the,
it's a personality aspect. It's a personality
definitely
aspect.
Personality.
And so your personality is that you really see people and you really get them engaged and really dig in and get involved. But then when they get really involved with you, then you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Get
this
away
is
from
too
me.
Involved. Because then the intimacy arrives, and if you're not ready for the level of intimacy that's going to come towards you, then you would push it away, and then you would be ambivalent towards it. And then those folks would then react in some way, anxious, or they would react avoidant.
Or they come away. Tighter after you are you going?
I would do. I would come tighter after you.
No, but I
I would track you down.
See, I think that it helps people at home to have conversations like this. Like I'm saying mm-hmm. that I do that. I know I have attachment disorder still. I know how it actuates, how I create like I'll be there for you, but then I resent that you want me to be there for you, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
This causes constant conflict about every 3 to 6 months.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so as you're growing older, you don't want that chaos in your life, mm-hmm. right?
Shocking. Mm-hmm.
So what I've done now is overcompensate. Like, I don't really let anybody attach to me either. I just hide and climb
on.
Now
it's avoidant.
Now it's straight avoidant.
You can't win with this stuff, Mary.
You need to go back to treatement.
Mary's moving towards secure. Yeah.
Slowly. Moving towards secure.
And talk about how these problems transfer not just romantically or interpersonally in marriage and with your parents or whatever, but to your children, because that's what's going wrong in America.
Well,
is everybody's fucked up problems they're projecting, and it's creating the next generation of trauma.
Right. So if you can't have straight intimate connection, you can't build regulation. And so they're growing up dysregulated, distrustful, in a dance with their intimate partners.
So many children I see, 7 to 10 at my son's school, have described being anxious mm-hmm. and feeling embarrassed. So
embarrassed. That's embarrassed the avoidant thing, probably.
But what are their parents doing? That's because rather than talk about liberals and conservatives, I'm more interested in what are the
probably intruding, probably intrusive. They're intrusive,
okay,
so the child.
Yeah, that's what's avoidance or like.
Yeah, so the child doesn't mm-hmm. learn to sort of navigate in the world
on their own.
Yeah, and learn to test reality. Reality testing. So rapprochement. Go out in the world. Take some risks, go back with refueling at home, mm-hmm. go back out in the world. That was the piece that I lacked badly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to do years of that in therapy. And it's going out in the world, having a secure base to come back to. And as you test in the world, you become less anxious because you're walking through things. You start to experience yourself in a more realistic and whole way. You start experiencing reality. You start experiencing boundaries.
It distorts reality. Mm-hmm. The anxiety distorts reality.
Sure.
That's what listeners need to know, how destructive this is in the fiber of our communities and in our nation. So I'll give you an example. Elvis was anxious. He tends to use that word a lot, mm-hmm. right? About his report card that was coming Friday, right? And I said, what are you anxious about? What are you worried about? And he's like, math. And I said, well, he's really good at math.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, what are you talking about? So then got the report card, 100%. Hey, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was like, what the hell is this? So it's displaced. Mm-hmm. The anxiety is coming mm-hmm. from somewhere else.
Yes.
It wasn't math.
No, it's coming from somewhere else, and it's probably having to do with pleasing or worry.
Perfectionism.
Yeah, because I was always anxious for every test in school.
Yeah,
and
me too.
You know, I always had to get an A, and I was always, I would get severe, you know, being super nervous before any test.
But perfectionism, and, that was your thing.
Yeah. Like, I remember having an A in seventh grade in English, and they announced an extra credit report you could do. And even though I had an A, I couldn't not do the extra credit.
What did the perfectionism mean to you? What was it? Did you have a sense of it solving a problem? Or
I just, you know, I had it from such a young age. Yeah. I had to be the best dancer in my group, the straight A student, the student of the year.
The hero.
Yeah. I remember when I lost the spelling bee, I came in second and being hysterically crying mm-hmm. in school, and everyone had to console
this
me.
This stuff goes on every day in Los Angeles, what she's describing.
Well, the problem with our country.
But my family never made me have to get the A's. It was something within me that
I'm just wondering what problem it was solving for you, what it did for you.
Well, it guards against shame and embarrassment. And also, I think how our parents feel about themselves is far more powerful than what they project that we're supposed to be doing towards ourselves. Like, I feel like my family, they had good intentions intellectually, but how they felt about themselves inside,
right.
I picked up on way more than what they were telling me.
Yes,
like,
the emotional.
You're great and everything's great and you're good at this. But I couldn't hear it because I kept feeling that, like, their inauthenticity under that.
Yeah. No, we have to be a whole being, right? The right and the left brain, the intellectual part and the holistic part. And if kids pick up on that holistic part if it's not lined up with the intellectual part.
And I was extremely sensitive, which did, you know, come out and become very good for me later in life when I was able to manage that intuition. When I was able to do that and I was able to manage what came up for me and I was able to move through into, you know, becoming an empathic person, that's when it all kind of clicked in, mm-hmm. like why I was so sensitive when I was a baby
Again,
and why I was so sensitive.
You're able to see it from another perspective. You're not in it. No.
And working through all of those, you know, reasons why my brain got very dysregulated, you know, just being that sensitive in the environment. And
do you know
Shelley's
story?
Sensitive
Marilyn,
people.
About being locked units and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, I don't know all of that. I mean,
she was a rock and roll girl.
I mean, I know what was happening.
You make it seem like it was like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. This was a girl you could depend on. She always knew what to do.
I'm saying when the Xanax withdrawal kicked in.
That was years later.
But you know why it bothers me is because you were so mishandled by the medical system. It drives me insane. You were mishandled.
Well, first of all, I had a year of sobriety, and I didn't do anything they told me to do. Okay, so part of
Marielle,
the issue,
listen carefully.
I had a year of sobriety, and I did everything that they told me not to do, and I didn't do anything they told me to do except stay sober. Okay, mm-hmm. So I was stark raving sober at about a year and 15 months of sobriety. I was crazy because I had replaced and sublimated drugs for relationships.
Not familiar?
Yes.
Drugs for relationships.
But how did you get on benzos?
I got on benzos because I had a nervous breakdown because certain things happened when that relationship and those relationships that I couldn't manage that reminded me of when I was a kid, and I didn't have any coping strategies for it because, again, I didn't do anything they told me to do in the first year of sobriety.
How long does it take to get addicted to Xanax? How long did it take?
No. I wasn't addicted to Xanax. I took it, and then I started abusing it, and then I ended up having to reset my sobriety.
So how long was that? Like 3 months?
Yeah, probably 2 months or so.
Can you become crazy much?
Oh, yeah.
We used to take them all the time. Didn't do anything.
you're what you call
crazy.
A heavyweight.
No, she was taking them too. She
I
was
miss
at
Xanax.
The bakery.
I was at the bakery.
So how does so what Drew doesn't know?
I love Xanax.
There was a bakery.
I used to say I wanted to marry a big
But you didn't
Xanax,
know
though.
This place. This was in the 80s. There was a bakery on Beverly Boulevard. You could go and buy Xanax for $1 a pill.
It was
the
Valium.
Bakery.
It wasn't. It was
Valium. Diazepam.
I'll take any Benzo.
Valium. That's Valium.
It was Valium. Yeah.
But you got strung out of Xanax though.
No, I got strung out on Valium when I was using, and then when I got sober,
we were all strung out on it, Martine, all of us.
Think how lucky
you
were.
Could buy them for $1 uphill.
Think how lucky you were not to die on the benzo-opiate combo.
Yeah.
Because that combo is deadly.
Well, we had the crack in there, too, though. That was helping.
That was helping. It was helping something. But I don't know what it was helping.
Shelley, I'm losing you. I'm losing track of your story. My recollection was somehow Xanax got going.
Yeah, Xanax, because I ended up in the psych ward.
This was acting around
sober.
And
because I had a breakdown.
Whatever.
Like a type of breakdown.
A mood.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I was very, very depressed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so I went to the psych ward, and then they gave me Xanax. Yeah. It fixed it.
That's why they believe in it. Drew.
I know. What do you think? Adderall fixes ADHD.
No, yeah.
Until your addiction kicks in, and then it's boom.
Right. So the addiction kicks in.
You ever been on Adderall?
I tried it once and didn't like it. Bomb. I don't like uppers. I'm too hyper for that.
Yeah, they do drugs because
they work.
Why they do them.
I like downers.
So the Xanax kicked in the hospital. Okay, and then?
And then I took it because, you know, I...
You're supposed to.
Because it was
working.
And then, but they also gave me other medications, too.
I understand.
Around that. But then I abused the medication. I had to then stop, and then I had to restart my time, which was 22.
Yeah.
22 years ago.
How long before you started? You had to stop. How long were you on it before you stopped?
Oh, I wasn't on it very long. A couple of months.
I thought Xanax withdrawal sent you, and you had a bunch of weird.
That was the first time I got sober.
Okay.
The first time I was addicted to Valium.
So it was Valium withdrawal.
And they gave
you a bunch of crazy diagnoses, right?
Yes. Okay.
put you in a locked unit, right?
So, Drew, just to synopsize modern times and old times. I didn't like diazepam. Neither did a lot of our friends.
But once you heard
you could get them for a dollar a piece, we would line up at this bakery, right? And take tons of them, right? That's what's going on now with fentanyl in America.
Jeez.
It's so cheap. You can get high for $10. You can die for $10.
What is fentanyl?
Fentanyl is
a strong heroin.
A lot of those doctors, I would imagine, you were in rehab with on it.
I think some of the anesthesiologists. No, because there was a lot of anesthesiologists in there.
Bob's favorite.
Injecting themselves with a lot of their drugs, the different anesthesia drugs. Actually, one of the guys right now that was just in there, he's in jail now because I think he might have gotten bailed out for he was doing anesthesia for another physician and he passed out during the surgery and the person died.
That's his occupation.
It's in the news a month or 2 months ago.
This is craziness what's going on.
The guy's in PTP right now.
Whoa.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He was close to retiring to the anesthesiologist, but injecting himself with the drugs.
About the fentanyl though is the regulation that Shelley and mine's generation was, we were regulated by $20 and $40.
Yeah.
And it wasn't much morphine in that $20 or $40.
There was not.
And the economics kept you in a certain check. There's none of that anymore. You can buy fentanyl
for $5.
You can buy I don't know how it comes in, I guess grams. Mm. You can buy a gram for $20 or something. Somebody email us it's unbelievable. And the kids
so
are preferring
cheap.
That. I have kids that are strictly identified as fentanyl addicts.
What
kind of world are we in, man?
I don't know. I just like alcohol and Xanax.
I know.
I'm so boring.
But the reason why I wanted to bring up, I wanted to get a little bit healthier because I want to have children and I want them. I don't want to fuck them up, right? So your main dream the whole time I've known you for 10 years now is to get yourself together, find the right guy, and have children.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to talk about here is you get yourself together, all the rest of it will fall in place.
Mm-hmm.
Stop thinking the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean?
I'm engaged and we're going to get married.
No, you didn't hear him.
July 7th, and we're going to have babies.
No, say it again.
because
so you expect babies to solve the problems.
No, I think you've done a really good job to not have children when you knew you weren't capable or
well, that's not why I wasn't having them because I didn't want to be pregnant and have to go through that when I was still making money off appearances and things.
By the way, I'm going to speak on your behalf, but we're applauding you for the progress and how much you've done.
No, you're not that far away from being just fucked up like me trying to do your best. I'm trying to give you hope.
Yeah. No.
You can be as fucked up as Bob.
Yeah. I mean, that's not where we're at, but I function pretty well. My kids aren't basket cases yet. We'll see. But But we're all trying and we have these conversations.
I'm just worried when I have kids, how I'm going to deal with if they're not straight A students, if they're not.
Oh, you better count on that.
I mean, because I know that I'm going to.
You can't have your stuff through them.
And that's
I know.
Exactly
and I'm like,
what
if she's not a star
about.
Ballerina? I've already thought she can only watch, well, if it's a girl, but I wanted her to do ballet and she's only going to watch ballet on TV.
What if she hates it?
I hated it till I was older, and then I loved it.
So she's going to force her to do it.
Well,
you
know,
I
think you have to make, you know, my grandparents made me play the piano. I played the clarinet. I did ballet. And then ballet was finally the thing I liked from, you know, fourth or fifth grade on. It was all dance. You know, and had they let me quit, I would have been so sad. But they told me I couldn't quit everything. They let me quit the piano.
It is a weird zone. That's a weird thing.
It's tough. It's very tough.
They let me quit the piano. They let me quit the clarinet. I did bowling and dance. They wouldn't let me quit all my activities.
We all kind of tried. You're trying to the modern parenting that you guys did, but it's ironic that out of three kids, two became athletes, focused on athletes just like you were as a kid. You didn't push them to, but that's what they became, right? I think we Shelley's Ivy's a musician.
Uh-huh.
Huh?
I
know, but he, what I'm trying to say is, even if we try to do the right in parenting, you didn't want to encourage her to be a musician. Maybe you didn't want to like what Mary's saying, right?
Ballet.
Right? You didn't
straight
do
A's
that.
And
I
ballet.
Know you didn't, but yet the genetics or it comes through or
I think the genetics do come through. In a lot of ways, but we exposed Ivy to a lot of different things, piano and dance, and we just put her in anything that she was interested in, and then if she liked it, we would sign up again, and then if she liked that, we would sign up again, and when she wanted to drop out of piano because it was boring, I was like, okay, but what are you going to do instead?
That's my grandparents did with me.
Yeah,
you know?
Just what are you going to do instead?
Yeah. I'm going to give you the example,
though. So she picked
up guitar. My older son told me at 15 years old, that school didn't matter because he was just going to be a musician like me and Don and everybody. And I said, are you trying to kill me? What are you talking about?
Great.
No, you can't be a musician. It's the worst life ever. Right?
Right.
Would you, you know, what do you think when she said
no, because I give Ivy strategies, coping strategies. It's not the life. It's how you cope with it.
Wow, that sounds like a book.
It's
that's
not
Shelley Sprague's book.
All right.
Right there.
Do you want to talk to Dan from Florida?
Oh, sure.
Let's talk to Dan.
So he writes me on Twitter a lot.
Is this a former Bo?
No.
Okay. Here is Dan. Dan, go ahead.
No, I'm too old for her.
Okay, what's going on?
I wanted to ask you, shouldn't these people change their environment? Wouldn't that be helpful?
Which people?
For people who have to change their lifestyle.
Yeah, that's what she said she did. She's only hanging out with the right people.
There's a sort of a...
Well, I mean, how about the geography?
Yeah,
geography doesn't matter. It's people that matter.
He wants me to move to Florida.
Good.
No.
But,
my mom is in Boca by him.
Boca.
I'd love to move. I'll take care of you, Barry.
Oh, Jesus.
But listen, you know, like I have now, I went to USC too.
Oh, okay.
But a long time ago, and the best thing is now since 1969, I never smoked another joint or had another drink.
Right.
So I've been sober for 50 years.
Holy moly!
So it can be done.
Well, I'm not sure you're an alcoholic, but oh, good, it can be done. That's for sure. And
it can be. Yeah, but it was rough, but I made through. And
whoops, I'm sorry. He just went back on hold there. Hold on, let me get him back. I've just got my finger on the button just in case.
Is this a friend of yours?
No, he used to call into my Vivid Radio show every week, and then he writes me on Twitter every day.
Okay. You ever met him?
He came to a club appearance once.
I'm sure.
But I didn't get to see him for long, so.
Well, but the point is, though, doing a geographic never works.
People is a good idea because you don't have anything in common with people that are
I know,
that
but you'll be attracted to people who are bad for you. That's the way addicts work. That's the way trauma works.
So you'll find it anywhere you go if you try to avoid the place. But changing your environment from unhealthy to healthy, being around people who are healthier, who are making better choices in their life, those are the people you want to try to gravitate towards if you're in the same environment, like the same town. You want to try to gravitate towards people who are doing better in that environment because you can't always get away from your environment.
I'm going to read some emails to you guys, okay?
Okay.
Advice. My brother suffers from PTSD as a result of sexual abuse when he was 8. He's in his 30s now and continues to have deep-seated budget issues. He sees a family counselor, but to no avail. I mean, this is the common thing. And this is the
EMDR.
Other. This is the big thing in our country right now. Everyone has had adverse childhood experiences. Like 60% of the population has had major childhood trauma. It's some crazy number like that. And, you know, it's all you see.
I think EMDR and DBT.
But somebody who really knows trauma. Did you have trauma other than that chronic, sort of a chronic thing?
Yeah, just the different, even like that. But no sexual abuse or anything like that.
Alcohol. Come on, you guys are being quiet.
Well, it just
let's talk about my fiance. Let's talk about my fiance.
Because it gets depressing when
he's so
you
cute.
When you look at people who are seeking help and they can't get it, right?
Or what kind of help?
Drew,
for
we
them
just
to
talked
get.
About this. The two best therapists I know that I would recommend my partner, my family members to go to cost One costs $350 an hour.
You
were
expensive.
Nice enough to see Elijah for half price of his kids. But $350 an hour, I mean, that's crazy. That's
I think if someone can't afford a therapist, they could go to, you know, you can go to different meetings and get a sponsor, and then that's a...
Yeah, but for this trauma, you've got to get therapy. You've got to get therapy.
And very specific types of therapy, because you could be in therapy for a very long time and not get at this type of material because of your own defense mechanisms that you build up to survive. So you want to make sure that you get the right type of therapy for PTSD specifically.
I mean, somebody who knows how to deal with childhood trauma.
It's so important.
Yeah.
It's crucial.
Thing. Let's take the post-traumatic stress out of it and just talk about the trauma. I think PTSD is a very popular catchphrase that everyone has. All the returning
it's
veterans have. All the wounded warriors have. Anybody, you know, it's just.
I agree.
Trauma is what's wrong with us.
Yes.
Yeah, and I agree that we should change. We should separate the types of trauma and put it in different categories, because I do think that that combat trauma is different
than childhood trauma. Absolutely.
And I do think we need to
What's the top of the heap is sexual childhood abuse. It's the top of the heap.
I mean, severe physical abuse probably gets there too, but sexual abuse is the mind.
It's a lot. It happens a lot more than people want to admit.
I know.
It does.
We went through an epidemic of it.
When?
In the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then, you know, a certain percentage of those people acted out a little bit. And so it's.
But
it's
her thing of covert is what's going on. I finally, when you talked that last time, I looked it all up. That's what's going on. That's what my clients are describing.
Covert sexual
Not
abuse.
Sexual
covert
abuse,
incest.
But
yes.
best friends with their
like
mom.
Mental sexual
Best friends
abuse,
with their mom.
Did something happen like that with you?
No, but my very, very close friend in treatment has, I mean, he's been battling this for a long time.
And what did
Explain it a little bit.
Yeah, describe it.
I mean,
so his story.
Well, the way he explained it to me was that, you know, his mother, you know, she would always sleep in bed with him. Was always, you know, brushing his mom's hair. Just the mom, you know, the mom expected him to always, you know, tell her how beautiful she was.
Be his little man.
And she
psycho shit.
Yeah,
I know.
I know. She would sleep in bed with him instead of her husband.
Oh my God! And what does the husband think?
This is surrogate spouse.
Yeah.
Surrogate spouse when the
covert incest is.
Yeah, it's very very. Avoidance.
They usually become avoidance.
Yes.
He ended up starting. He could not be in close relationships. Mm-hmm. He
except for with his mother.
Well, yes, but anytime he would become
sexually addicted.
So anytime he would become close to a woman he was dating, he couldn't continue dating her. He could only have sex with prostitutes.
Yeah, so your
because he
talk,
didn't want emotional attachment.
You heard about people who can't be sexual. They can't be sexual with somebody that they love.
That they love, exactly.
Yeah, because it's too consuming. Mm-hmm. They get lost in it.
And he's been in a lot of treatment. He does, the EDMR?
EMDR.
He's gone to Promises twice for 90 days. They sent him to the Blue Tiger Place in Palm Springs.
Does he have a drug problem too?
You know what? He had been 7 years sober and then he drank again. Mm. But it's mostly gambling and the prostitutes.
Yeah,
are his
we're doing a lot of promo for Blue Tiger and Promises. So let me just say that Shelly is the director of the Bel Air Recovery Center.
It's just my life is so Promises. You know,
but you've learned so much. It's really impressive. I'm glad you've seen all the different flavors of kinds of addictions that are out there and sort of paid attention.
What is the Blue Tiger?
I mean, the only reason I know right now. Now that my fiance is there, so that's
what
all I know. I'm going for a couple of therapy.
Where does the name come from? Is that a part of sex addiction?
Yeah.
Blue Tiger?
What does it mean? Like Tiger Mom or what?
No, there was Waking the Tiger. There was a famous book by Levine that Peter Levine that was about the trauma
maybe
stuff.
Maybe it has nothing to do
yeah,
with
maybe
that.
The guy yeah. who owns it just sounds likes the color blue ball. And he likes
well, maybe
tigers.
Maybe it has nothing to do with that.
Are you sure you didn't get the names mixed up and that's a bar one, you're sipping in?
No, I would call mine the Pink Pomeranian. I like pink and I like Pomeranians. So
you know, it sounds like
maybe
that's what she would call it. So maybe he likes the Blue Tiger.
It sounds like Indian imagery. You know, like maybe some Indian.
But it feels Japanese.
You know what? When I go there on Tuesday, Bob, I will ask them why Blue
the
Tiger.
Say we
and I will
take
make
a
sure
tour
to let
there.
You know.
Yeah. Let's take a tour.
I'm
going
to say he doesn't care about the program. He just wants to know why Blue Tiger.
And it's just men.
Yeah, just men.
Just men.
And they only have 4 to 6 there at a time. And here's what I don't think is great about the program. See, it's not a commercial for them. Is that I find it strange that they have them doing only a 12-day treatment program. They're called a 12-day boot camp because to really, you know, with these sex addictions, any treatment, you really need at least 30 days. I think 90 days realistically.
Well, but there's not a medical piece. You know what I mean?
It's there's just, no detox.
It's hard to justify staying to pay for that.
Because they can talk if they stay active in their program on the outside, okay. They should be able to live independently. Yeah. But they've got to do it.
You just really like inpatient treatment, don't you?
Well, I just think that it takes. You know, if you're a really bad sex addict and you're seeing prostitutes constantly or
there,
porn
there
all
are
the time,
places
it
that
takes
will hold
a
longer.
Longer time to create a behavioral change.
Well, it takes.
You know,
I think a lifetime.
Yeah,
that's Mary saying
90 days of treatment increases your success rate 50%.
And you identify with sex addiction for a while too, right?
No, I realized never sex addiction.
Because sex and love kind of goes together.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing that's, mine was definitely a love addiction. Because I've discovered that, I don't want to ever just have sex with a random guy.
Right.
And I was discovering when I was doing my radio show a couple of years ago and I did the topic of one-night stands. Because I just assumed I must have had plenty of those. I never actually had a one-night stand because mine were always, even if I met the guy that night at a bar and had sex with him that night, I ended up dating him or having a relationship. Mm-hmm. Even the guys I'd meet on the road traveling, I'd fly them out to LA to stay with me. So mine was always around a relationship. It was never just purely sex.
Trying to have those babies.
No, I was not ever trying to have babies
But they
then.
Do. It does.
Honestly, ideally, I was like, if I could have a baby at 50, once my looks are, Women, my fiance is 51 and he looks great.
Women sort of back into sex addiction through love addiction, though, Mary Ellen.
They kind of come to it that way.
And so, all right, we got to wrap everything up. It's like a breath of fresh air that comes in.
You got to get in our fields. You got to stay sober.
Well, I'm going back to college, my fiance wants me to pretty much end the appearances I have lined up, and then because he went, when he went back to college, he didn't even go to medical school until he was like early 30s. You know,
whoa,
he didn't even, he had dropped out of college.
It does happen quite a bit.
He went back to college around 27 after having dropped out.
Particularly around his age, they liked that medical schools liked people that had other life experiences coming into medicine.
But he's inspired me because I already have a degree in theater, so why not? I did a lot of psychology classes. Originally, I was just going to go for my KDAC, which is a one-year course to be drug and alcohol.
No, go back to school.
But I'm just going to go back it'll probably be with 2 years. I have all my core curriculum.
That's great.
And go to Cal State Northridge, and then I can do psychology and try to really.
Oh, no, so, I think this is an excellent avenue for you.
100%. I was too old to go back to school, and then he was just very supportive of that.
Were you in treatment with Jenny Ketchum?
No. I know her from.
So she got a social work degree.
That's a KDAC thing.
No, she went to graduate school.
Look at me demented. Like,
that's brilliant.
I like social workers more than MFTs. So it takes more.
I just love psychology.
She's a therapist now.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. You didn't get to talk to her, did you?
No, I haven't spoken to her.
Oh, my God.
I just think it's so great that people are going back to school and getting education.
And she's married as a kid now.
That's so wonderful.
I'm having twins.
That's so wonderful.
No, we are. We're going to do IVF.
Oh, you're going to make sure you have twins.
Oh, my God.
You'll
be careful what you wish for.
No, I know. Well, because, because he's 51.
What if
so
he
we
got
don't wanna,
four? What if he got four?
We're just going to put in two, but, because he's 51, so he doesn't want to wait, too long.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to be, 75 when the kids graduate high school.
I do.
But that's true. You had a kid later. Keep putting my foot in my mouth here. Over 50s, your looks fade. He doesn't want to be 75.
I know. Take it easy.
We're going to wrap this up. Anything else you want to say, Mary, before anything?
Can everyone here come to my wedding? I don't know you, but you can come to the wedding, too.
Nate the man.
It's July 7th.
Oh, we have to go to the wedding. Where? don't tell specifically.
At Promises Malibu, obviously.
Honestly, I wanted to get married there, but he... I told promises.
You nailed that.
I told promises I wanted to get married
there. At the upper house? At the upper house, right?
Yeah, I just thought
they
the main
do
house,
have a beautiful house there that you could get married at.
Uh-huh. I forgot what's the name of the, I should know the name of the place. So, but we have the location book that's in Los Angeles.
Okay,
so
it's here. All right.
Yeah, I'll give you guys. You guys all have to come.
It's in Maui.
And it's going to be it's a dry wedding.
Good.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, you know, he thinks his physician friends aren't going to be happy with the no alcohol there, but
too bad.
It's only an evening.
Yeah, yeah, they can go somewhere else afterwards.
Yeah. We'll see if he sticks to that.
Get a little flask and come on in.
Thank you.
All right, see you later.
Yes.
Wait. Share the show. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget our YouTube channel as well. YouTube channel. And one more thing, check us out on the KBC 790 Midday Live Talk radio show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3. Also, there's a podcast of that. My new co-host is Lauren Savant. We are together every day. And you can tune in on the internet at kbc.com. And if you missed it, we make it simple for you to find the shows in podcast form at dr.com. Next to all the podcasts we offer there, the Playroom Pods. You guys, thank you so much, and we'll see everybody.
I love you, Dr. Drew. I love you too,
Bubba. Love you.
See you all next time. Hey, we are very excited to welcome our friends at Bergamot. That's a brand that made a significant impact on me. They make a variety of supplements. They use extract from the bergamot citrus fruit. They act as a natural statin and can improve a number of cardiovascular parameters, things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, insulin resistance, all the metabolic syndrome stuff. Now the makers also bring you Bergamot Sport that provides all the same benefits with additional additives designed to help athletes and those with an active lifestyle. Bergamot Sport may help improve stamina as well as reduce recovery time as well as muscle inflammation. I've used the product myself. I've recommended it to patients, and Susan uses it. My wife, Susan, you've been using the Bergafem for over a year, so what do you think about it?
After I reached 45, things started changing. Changes in libido, energy, and metabolism.
What?
And
no way.
Then there are hot flashes that you know about, right, Jim?
Yes.
My doctor prescribed bioidentical pellets every 4 months, and then I got hot flashes, felt fatigued at the end of my cycle. Bergafem fixed all of that for me. I took it for a year and ran out, and the hot flashes came back, and a little weight gain in my waist as well. So I'm taking one tablet a day to keep the libido strong, sleeping better, and I also noticed a loss of abdominal fat, honey.
Ooh, you're perfect. Is that the right response for husbands? So try Bergamot Sport for yourself. Visit Bergamot.com for all the products that may be right for you. That's Bergamet, Bergamot.com. Or click the Bergamot banner at doctor.com. And for a limited time, our listeners save an additional 10% on their order by entering the code DRDREW. That's just Dr. Drew at checkout. All one word, DRDREW.
To learn more about Bergafem, please visit Bergamot.com today. I love it.
Yeah, you do. You've been using it right along. It's worked. Well, we're so pleased to have Hydrolite back. Hydrolite is something that we and my family use just about every day, and it is simply the best oral rehydration product I have ever seen. And there are many reasons you should keep some around. I got the flu. I relied on Hydrolite because I knew it would rehydrate me the way an IV fluid would. We all have heard about the flus and the diarrheas, and they all knock you out. Staying well hydrated is critical to getting over these conditions. Even if you manage to avoid getting infected, your schedule is half as busy as mine. Getting 8 glasses of water a day isn't likely to happen. And you don't need it if you've got the proper hydration product, Hydrolite. That is the beauty. Whether you're sick or not, you're going to absolutely benefit from proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. Hydrolite does this better than a sports drink or water alone. That's right, better. And it comes in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade. It's available in a pre-mixed powder. My personal preference is little effervescent tablets you can simply drop in a bottle of water or a glass of water. And you're done. You got it. And you are rehydrated. And compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. I know. Don't buy into the hype of the brands. Use Hydrolite. It's a better product. I'm telling you. I had intended to invent it. They got there first. So I'm all behind them. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages. And each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. Order Hydrolite today, Hydrolite.com/DRDREW. That is Hydrolite.com/Dr. Drew. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydrolite. We actually buy in bulk in our family. So we're going to click through. Believe me, just click the banner on my site and use the code DrDrew18. That is DRDREW18.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.